and sounds. And what the restraint here means is not to have akusala when we come across these objects. And the third, paragraph C, is the virtue of livelihood purification. And sounds. And what the restraint here means is not to have akusala when we come across these objects. And the third, paragraph C, is the virtue of livelihood purification. Now, for monks, pure livelihood means getting requisites by proper means. That means by going for alms round, monks get food, and by picking up pieces of cloth and making these cloth pieces of cloth into a robe and wearing it and so on. So these are the good livelihood of the monks. But if monks do not follow these rules, and there is no purity of virtue of livelihood purification, it will also be explained in detail later. Here, abstinence from such wrong livelihood as entails transgression of the six training precepts announced with respect to livelihood, and entails the evil states beginning with scheming, talking, hinting, belittling, pursuing gain with gain, is virtue of livelihood purification. If you have read through this chapter, you will know what these are, and I'm afraid that you know more about the tricks monks, let's say bad monks, use in obtaining what they want. Now, the six training precepts we will find in paragraph 60. So in paragraph 60, these are given one by one. With livelihood as cause, with livelihood as reason, one of evil wishes, a prey to wishes, lays claim to a higher than human state that is non-existent, not effect, the contravention of which is defeat. That means, because I want to be rich, so I want to have, I want to possess many requisites, many things, and so even though I have not attained any of the stages of enlightenment, I will say I am enlightened or something like that, so that you think much of me and you think of giving me, offering me things, something like that. So such a breach of the rule is caused by something like livelihood. That means I don't want to go out for alms. I want to be at the monastery and just eat what people bring to me, maybe rich food and so on. So these six rules are proclaimed or laid down with regard to monks' livelihood. So defeat, you see the word defeat there, right? And these are technical words. Defeat means if a monk breaks this rule, then he is finished as a monk. He is defeated as a monk. He is no longer a monk, even though he may be still going on wearing the robes, and even though he may still go on admitting himself as a monk, but he is in fact, in reality, not a monk. The moment he says this and the other understands it. So there are these six rules. We'll come to these six rules later. If the person spoken to does not understand at that moment, then he's not defeated. Mm-hmm. But if the person to whom he's speaking knows at the moment that this monk is saying that he is enlightened, and the monk is not really enlightened, then there is defeat.
So his defeat depends on somebody else recognizing
him. Yeah. Understanding, yes. And I want you to read I think you have read the resorts and others. For monks, which are resorts for monks and which are not resorts for monks. Resort here means which monks must engage in and which monks must not engage in. Now on page 17 and in paragraph 44, about middle of the paragraph you find here someone makes a livelihood by gifts of bamboos or by gifts of leaves or by gifts of flowers, fruits, bathing powder and toothsticks or by flattery or by being supreme. you know that? Or by fondling. Now, I'll come to being supreme later. By fondling really means by babysitting, by picking up a baby and by taking care of it. Not just by fondling, no, by taking care of a baby. See, somebody leaves a baby with you and with a monk, and if he takes care of the baby in order to please that man, that person, then it is called here fondling. Now, being subri, that means living by a livelihood which resembles being supreme. And you don't still understand, right? So please turn to page 28. Paragraph 75. Being supreme is resemblance to bean soup. For just as when beans are being cooked, only a few do not get cooked. The rest get cooked. So to the person in whose speech only a little is true, the rest being false, is called a bean soup. That's called bean soup. So most of what he said is just lies. There's an explanation in English, but not meaning the same thing, half-baked or something. Huh? But that doesn't mean that...
Wisecracking?
I don't know. If what most of what they say is not true, and only a little is true, then I'm guilty of this being subri. And on page 18, the resort, we have to understand this properly. Now, proper resort, there is proper resort and improper resort. Hearing, what is improper resort? Here someone has prostitutes as resort, or he has widows, old maids, eunuchs, bhikkhunis or devans as resort. Having them as resort means being friends with them, being intimate with them, frequenting their houses. That is what is meant by having them as resort. So there are some places which monks must always avoid, the places of these people. And then on page 19, paragraph 49, another kind of resort. Three kinds of resort: proper resort as support, proper resort as guarding, and proper resort as anchoring. Here, what is proper resort as support? A good friend who exhibits the 10 instances of talk, they are given in the footnote, in whose presence one hears what has not been heard, and so on. In whose presence really means depending on whom, not just in his presence. That means from him. So you hear something from him. That is what is meant here. And he has that what has not been heard, corrects what has been heard, gets rid of doubt, rectifies one's view, and gains confidence. Now, these are the benefits of hearing to Dhamma talk. There are, Buddha said in one sutta, that there are five benefits to be gained from listening to Dhamma talk. And the first one is, you hear what you have not heard before, so new information, that is. And then you correct what has been heard. That means you can clarify what you have heard before when you hear it again. And then gets rid of doubt, that is a third benefit. You can remove doubts about something when you hear Dhamma talk. And rectifies one's view. If you have a wrong view, then you can set it right when you listen to Dhamma talk. And gains confidence, that means your mind becomes full of confidence. So these are the five benefits to be gained from listening to Dhamma talk. Or by training under whom, and actually not training under whom, by following his example, by following whose example, one grows in faith, virtue, learning, generosity, and understanding. And next paragraph, what is proper resort as guarding? Here, a bhikkhu, having entered inside a house, having gone into a street and so on, he always made this mistake, Jnanam Holi. Now, the Pali word here is antaragara. Now, gara means a house, and antara means in or between or within. So, antaragara, the Pali word, he translated as inside a house, because antara can mean inside, and gara means house. But the real meaning is a place which has houses in it. So it means a village. So having entered a village, having gone to a street, goes with downcast eyes, seeing the length of a plow yoke. So not inside a house. Monks must keep their eyes down when they go out into the village or into the town, and not just inside a house. So this is the wrong rendering of the Pali word. And then, seeing the length of a plow yoke, in fact, it is not plow yoke, it is carriage yoke. And a yoke is said to be of the about 4 cubits long, that means 6 feet long. So a monk is to look about 6 feet on the ground, not look up or look sideways. It may be possible where it is not so crowded, but in modern cities it is impossible. You have to look. If you just look down and walk, you will be knocked down by a car or something. But monks are trained to keep their eyes down. Not looking at an elephant, not looking at a horse, not looking at a carriage, a pedestrian, a woman, man, and so on. And then, so now we come to the end of Patimokkha, restraint. Seeing fear in the slightest fault means seeing danger in the slightest fault. So even a very slight fault or a transgression can do harm to you. Because especially when you practice meditation, this can be a great obstacle to your progress or to your concentration. Now, a monk is instructed to keep the rules intact. Even if he has broken a minor rule, and if he broke it intentionally, then the feeling of guilt is always with him, and this feeling of guilt will torment him when he practices meditation. So the slightest transgression is, there is danger in even in slightest transgression. So seeing danger in slightest transgression, he keeps his sila, his virtue, really pure. So we come to the end of the Patimokkha restraint today. How many pages do we have to go until the end of first chapter? 58 pages. Yeah. So, 2 more weeks, maybe. So please read on as much as you can. Turn it on, so I was not aware of it.